Blog Talk Radio.
A winter in Kansas. I'll never forget driving down the road and having ice crystals form on my windshield as I was driving to work. Don't want to do that again.
I don't know what that was.
Some kind of echo, I guess. So much to talk about today. I guess we should start with some grants.
Paris. Bonjour.
Yes. Yes, well...
But you know the first thing we should say? We are not afraid.
We aren't afraid.
Did you see the protests? Hundreds of thousands of people?
Yes.
That night of the event poured out, some square, large area in Paris?
Well, those terrorists need to get a thick skin and develop a sense of humor. Just not enough humor among those particular types. And it's troubling for me because
you have a background dealing with the Muslims, and why don't we each, because you're new to this, and I haven't been on the air in a while, and there may be people listening that don't know either one of us, but Terry, why don't you tell us about your background working with the military and in Iraq, and when you were in Iraq, I'm sure you ran into at least one Muslim. Both good and bad, right?
both good and bad. My job in Iraq was as a social scientist working for an Army civilian program to embed with combat forces in the country to develop intercultural understanding, to develop understandings of the tribes, which were highly anti-Al-Qaeda. Some of the people in Iraq initially when U.S. forces were found unable to secure the local populations, they bought into Al-Qaeda's bill of goods and then soon thereafter regretted it and turned against Al-Qaeda. That was known as the Awakening Movement. So I had a lot of interaction with those tribal groups, and most of the work that I did as an ethnographic research in Iraq was done in the areas of Iraq right now that have been taken over once again by Islamic militant groups now under the name of ISIL. So it's a tragedy. It's kind of funny because I am regarded in some circles as an authority on Islamism and militant Islam. And there are organizations in this country that have branded me an Islamophobe, and it's hard to stomach that, given that I was willing to risk my life to go to Iraq and help Muslim people rebuild their lives as best we could in the short time that we were there. But
And some of them perceived it that way, right? You had those that perceived you as helping, and then yet others who didn't.
Yeah. Well, I researched recidivist captives also. Detainees, and that was a very interesting experience because when you're dealing with recidivists, and I did this under not interrogating, but delivering sociocultural attitude surveys to them to find out, you know, what their attitudes about their country and other matters were. And what they felt the needs of the villages that they were from required. And they were the bad guys and easily distinguishable because at one point during the surge and after, we were giving the bad guys plenty of incentives to stop what they were doing, and they continued to act. And when you let somebody out of a detention camp once or twice or three times, and they continue to attack the Iraqi people, to attack people in areas where they live, to attack the government of Iraq and so on, you know you're dealing with a special class of people, and they're distinguishable from a type of fighter that was identified by David Kilcullen, he's an anthropologist, and also he was an advisor to General Petraeus. He wrote a book about them called Accidental Guerrillas. Accidental guerrillas are very different than the transformational kind that I studied. They are just people who get caught up in the contagion of fighting at the outside of war, but they're really, really not in it for the cause. So what happened in Paris yesterday was something that was committed by a group of people who are definitely in it for the cause. And they tried to strike a blow against civil liberties, against satire, and against free speech, and fundamental human freedoms that that we value here in the United States, and that many Muslims, most Muslims around the world, cherish and love and value. So here we are today, and it's troubling though to me. Islam is a very young religion, and I do believe, given my study of history, Islamic history, and also Western history, Judeo-Christian history.
You mean young because it's like 1,600 years old?
Well, yeah, relatively.
Yeah.
It's
older than most of us, right?
If we're going to look at this in an evolutionary sense, as a monotheistic faith, it is the youngest of the three monotheistic faiths in the world. And it has not completely undergone a reformation in the sense that the Judeo-Christian world has. And many Muslims know this. And so,
what do you mean by that? Reformation. What do you mean? That means reform, right?
Well, yes.
So?
Yes. And
what were our reforms, the Jews and the Christian reforms that the Muslims haven't gone through?
Well, we, by and large, the Judeo-Christian world has, and its governments have stopped waging holy war under the banner of their religions. We no longer have Christian crusades. We fight, but we fight for other reasons. And the ideological purists that comprise this small minority of Muslims in the world who committed these attacks in Paris yesterday are ideological purists. And what they are all about is regarded by most Muslims in the world today as an aberration and as something that they feel that their religion, as it is immersed in a modern, postmodern world today, doesn't subscribe to and doesn't need to subscribe to anymore today. And so I don't know what the solutions are. I hear quite a lot that France does not assimilate its Muslim immigrants, but by the same token, there are Muslim immigrants in France who don't want to assimilate. And so these are sociological problems in France and in other places in the world that we have yet to come to grips with.
So basically, there are a lot of Muslims out there, maybe not a majority, or has the faith as a whole not really embraced the modern era where Christianity and Judaism has, and I'm sure Buddhism and Hinduism has, and am I skipping any other religions out there?
Right.
I'm not sure. But they're all pretty content on hey, let's all just get along. And there's those Muslims that feel that they have a mission to go either convert or kill you.
Well, in that sense, the ideological purists are no different than the ideological purists that you find in an organization like the KKK or the people over in Pensacola who killed those doctors outside that women's clinic. Their agenda is you could call it millenarian, but it's progressive, and they're willing to kill for it.
Just throwing these words out, which means use military tactics to achieve
goals.
No.
Millenarian religions are religions that believe that at some time in the future, the Savior will return. They exist in all faiths. And this is another thing that is characteristic of the ideological purists in Islam and the ideological purists in any religion who are willing to commit acts of terrorism in the name of their faith. And it's certainly troubling to the rest of us. And what can I say?
Well, let me add some things here.
Go ahead.
Because what's happened in our lifetime, I'm maybe a little older than you, maybe a decade.
A decade, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe a little less than that.
Yeah. Well, I'm 58.
All right, a decade.
Yeah.
Exactly a decade.
Oh, is that right? All right. I won't try to guess how old you are, though.
Do the math.
It's not polite.
58 minus 10.
but anyway, certainly in our adult lifetimes in the last 30 years, which takes you back to 18, within that time the internet has been born, and communication, when I was a teenager, certainly even as a 23-year-old, I spent over a year in Israel, and a big part of it was in grad school. And for me to reach home and call my folks and say hi, a 5-minute phone call was like $20. You know, it was expensive. And near my grad school, there were some Israelis living there. They had a shortwave radio, and they used to let some of the students. They used to think it was cool. You go over there and they get a shortwave radio, and then they reach out to somebody in the United States that was willing to make a long distance call just for the thrill of hooking you up with your parents, and because it's shortwave radio, you know, you either send in or receive in, so you had to communicate. Yeah, so it was a hassle, right? Now you know, and I have still friends and family in Israel. To contact Israel and to speak to them, I know Americans who have moved there or gone there for an extended period of time, a year or so. You know, they just buy a Vonage phone box, you know, because you plug it into the internet, and they plug it into the internet over there in Israel, and now they have their local American phone number, and they dial out, and people dial them within the United States, and it's ringing over there. If you have Vonage, you can call Israel, an Israeli phone number, without paying anything. And then you have things like FaceTime and Skype. And then you also have the internet and Facebook, and you can chat. And you can use like things like Facebook and Twitter and all this other social media. Or you can create your own website and just start posting pictures and putting messages out to your followers. So where radical Islam may have been isolated in different pockets within the Middle East.
Not anymore.
They're out there broadcasting it, and you get young Muslims, and we've even had cases, more than one, of young Muslims who their parents are concerned. They may be from England, they may be from the United States, they may be from France, and their own parents are calling the authorities saying, I'm kind of concerned. My child, who's late teens, early 20s, is getting turned on by what they're reading in these websites, and these websites are geared to program you as a young Muslim to do acts like the bombing in Boston.
Well, this was a concern of ours in Iraq during the first wave of the insurgency there. There was one village where I worked, for example, in which we had an extraordinary number of teenage boys who were not in school, even though they could have been in school. We had, you know, done some civil affairs projects, had rebuilt some schools, so the girls were in school, and some of the boys were in school, but most of the boys were not in school. They were at minimum truant, and some of them were beginning to commit delinquent acts, and for the first time in their lives, they had acquired cell phones. That was the other thing that we gave a lot of people out in the countryside, cell phone towers and cell phones. And, of course, in a country like Iraq, where the place is, you know, at that time was one of the most violent places on the world, and being just, you know, the two rivers were just on fire at one time with vehicle IED attacks and so on. Having young men unsupervised by their fathers loitering, not in school, with cell phones can be a problem, because maybe some surrogate militant father figure will come along and persuade them to join the jihad. And we had some of that happening in Iraq, and we had to find ways to tamp down on that. And in the villages where I worked, the source of it was quite clear. You had people who, prior to the 2003 invasion, they had very cohesive communities, very cohesive social structure, family structure. Everything functioned relatively normal as anything can function under a military dictatorship. And so after the invasion, you had people whose crops were destroyed, and burned date palms, orchards.
Who did these acts?
All warring parties burned crops, including our own. And
it's not smart, is it?
No, it's not wise. If first of all, if it is your goal to occupy a country, to invade a country, you have to take people's lands, even if temporarily, in order to set up some kind of forward operating base somewhere in order to complete some kind of mission to which you've been assigned, don't burn people's crops down. Because when you do that, even after the place is pacified, then you have destroyed an entire economy. And
orchards. It's one thing.
My God.
It's one thing, a crop like wheat or corn that, you know.
Trees are a different matter.
Yes.
You're looking at four family generations. Some of these villages, four family generations of trees.
Well, to plant an olive tree,
takes them decades to mature. Decades.
Decades. It takes when if you're a child and your grandfather and you plant that tree, when you're a grandparent, that child, when the child becomes a grandparent, he'll be able to harvest the olives with his grandchildren.
That's right. That's right. So, you know, in a war, war changes people's consciousness. And with some people, war actually makes them better people than they were before. I've seen that. But I have also seen the opposite.
Well, it just makes you deal with reality, doesn't it? But
yes, it does. And you know, one of the underlying sociological problems in Iraq now, as is the case throughout the developing world, and it may be even extending into the Western world, if you wanted to consider the economic inequality that keeps increasing even in the West, is this thing we call the youth bulge. And so we have youth and no sense of opportunity, no jobs for them, and what do? They loiter. Even in the late 90s, when I was a study abroad student in Egypt at the American University at Cairo, you know, anywhere you walked in Cairo, in these outside the on these sidewalks outside these rows of cafes, you would see one young male after another loitering, doing nothing, unemployed, and so these, you know, beyond terrorism, there are larger global sociological problems taking place that diplomatically the world has yet to understand and combat in its own way. So I don't know what the next 10 years is going to bring. I wish that diplomatically...
You know what I'd like to do? Because you need probably to take a commercial break.
Oh, good.
And I'd like to talk about what's going on in Paris and France a little bit. And then in the last segment of the show, we're going to do talk about what's going on locally here, besides how cold it is.
Can we talk about the mangrove butchery on Palmasola Boulevard?
Yes, that's what we'll talk about.
Oh, good. We need to talk about mangroves.
We'll talk about how long it takes them. Talk about how long it takes them to recover.
Yeah, and what good mangroves are for people.
Yeah.
When they're not butchered and killed, because that's what happens when you butcher mangroves. They just die.
We'll get into that in literally just a moment here. And I'm hitting a button, and that's not what I want to hit. But it's just, I don't have the bumper, or I do have the bumper. Here we go. We'll be right back after this. All right, and for more information about Legal Shield and its identity theft products, you go to my website. I'm Mitch Mallett. I'm an independent associate with Legal Shield, and my special page is MalletAgency.com. MalletAgency.com, and there you can read or watch videos all about our identity theft plans, our membership plans, our business owner plans, our commercial truck driving plans. And if you'd like a new part-time, full-time career with Legal Shield, you can give me a call as well. And you can go there, and there's a little button there that says Sell Legal Shield, and there's a number of videos there you can watch. And then call me, 813-924-7994. Now, I'd like to give out a little shout-out to our friends at Arrow Environmental Services, because Arrow offers residential pest control, commercial pest control for termites, roaches, bed bugs, ants, rodents, as well as many other pests. Maybe we ought to hire...
Do skunks?
Skunks?
Yeah, skunks. I had a dream last night that skunks had infested my house. It was just an awful dream.
Oh.
You know what it's like having skunks in your house.
Maybe that's a metaphor for somebody.
Oh, they were spraying everything. Yeah, maybe it is.
Yeah.
I wonder who that could be.
Maybe some right-wing terrorists.
Yeah.
What do they call them? The American Taliban, right?
Yeah, neo-Nazi or somebody. I don't know.
I don't know. You know they do raccoons, but... I guess skunks, call them.
Yes.
You got to call Arrow because I'll give you their number. It's 941-981-4331. You can call them there because they'll get rid of the skunks maybe in your dreams. But they also offer lawn service, including tree, shrub, irrigation, tap insulation, and their very own total landscape care solution. Arrow has set the standard for service innovation, customer satisfaction, and Arrow looks forward to doing the same for you. Arrow's Peace of Mind pledge promises that they will treat any problem until you are completely satisfied or they'll refund the cost of the treatment, 941-981-4331, or you can go to arrowservices.com for more, and there's a coupon there, but I'm not supposed to say that.
Oh.
I'm not supposed to say that there's a coupon on their website.
You better take that back, Mitch.
I better take it back. All right. We're going to get back to the show. We don't have our bumper set up. We're going to be taking calls and calling. We're going to be with you in about 30 seconds. We do have one caller, and there's two ways of reaching out to us. Well, there's a few ways I want to go over this. You can call us at 941-745-1490, and that line right now is definitely busy. We have 100 phone lines right now at 347-989-0132.
I'm still trying to get my head wrapped around how we have so many phone lines.
We have 100 phone lines, and it's through the Block Talk Radio Network. We're broadcasting worldwide and on 1490 AM. And if you go out of range, if you want to share this with your friends, you can go to itsyourgavel.com, and there's a couple places to click. You can see our pretty pictures.
So we're worldwide. Does that mean some of my former research subjects in Iraq could be listening to me right now?
They could be.
Or
they
the ones
be.
In Paris?
The ones in Paris, I don't know how many people have reached out. This is only our second show together as co-hosts.
What about the Mean Girls? You think they're listening?
The Mean Girls, we need to... I posted on Facebook. It's posted on my Facebook wall. I got about 3,800 friends. So,
You never know. It can go viral.
We can go viral. We'll build momentum up. We will. But you can call 347-989-0132. And that's a unique phone number because you can just listen. And if you hit the one button, that a little thing pops up on our screen here, and it says that you want to participate in the conversation. So if you just want to call in and listen, you can do so. I've had people doing this before while they were driving to work, listening through their car stereos, but not participating. And then they go, you know what, I want to participate. And all of a sudden they see a little yellow light pop up, and that means they want to participate.
Yeah, if you're driving, use Bluetooth.
Yeah, use Bluetooth.
Yeah. Or pull over if you don't have Bluetooth.
Yeah. Anyway, and or you can just go to itchygavel.com and listen through the internet, and just listen to us stream. And we have a caller.
Oh, good.
I wonder who it could be.
You think it's Lawrence?
Maybe. Good morning.
Good morning. Your wish has come true.
Yeah, we are hoping for you, Lawrence.
Good morning.
So what's new, Lawrence?
It's your gavel, Lawrence.
Thank you. I was wondering, since you seem to be, or you profess to be, very knowledgeable as to world affairs, and we're talking about Paris, are you aware of everything that's happened in Paris over the last 24 hours?
I have been
following
the events in Paris for the past 24
hours. How about the car explosion in front of the Jewish synagogue?
Would you like to elaborate on the car explosion in front of the Jewish synagogue, Lawrence?
When did that occur, Lawrence?
So it would appear both of you.
Lawrence, when did that occur?
It appears that both of you are unaware of that.
Lawrence, when,
is that not correct?
Lawrence, I was on numerous news channels before I came here a half an hour.
Right. That explains one of the reasons you're uninformed.
I
wanted to know, why are you uninformed?
Lawrence, I just cut him off for a second. Lawrence, I asked you a direct question. So if you want to participate with us, you need to answer the questions and say, ignore them. It's a simple question. When did that car bombing in front of the synagogue occur? Okay?
Yesterday.
Yesterday.
The same day, within 24 hours of the attack, the terrorist attack at that publishing company or whatever it was. The
attack took place probably around 26, 27 hours ago.
Okay. So you guys are uninformed, and I'm just curious why that is, because you seem to be so worldly and knowledgeable of world affairs.
And you're trying to do these gotchas. You want to, like, oh, I'm going to...
You don't need to explain it to her, Mitch.
Just before...
She's an adult.
Sometimes I go researching some of these gotchas, and I find...
Yeah.
These events.
So what's your reason why you're uninformed?
Number one. Number two... I haven't heard about that bombing, and I'm not sure when it occurred. I know there was a car bombing some months ago in Paris, and the Muslims, and I do want to talk about it. Now, if you want to have a conversation about what happened, if you want to share with us more details about the car bombing, or do you want to just go, I knew something you don't know. So, you know, if you want to enlighten us on what happened, then go ahead. But don't call the show and call names.
In other words, Lawrence, just be constructive, okay? We want to have dialogue with you. Just be constructive.
Oh, okay, great.
I have been, you know, paying attention to news out of Paris.
Yes.
24 hours, and this is the first I've heard of a bombing of a Jewish synagogue. So this may or may not be true.
You're making
this is news to me. So, you know,
I know it's a news to you.
More about this, if it's true.
May I speak now?
Our explosion outside a French synagogue was caused by a mechanical failure, it says.
Oh, so you're going to believe that one now, huh?
Not being associated with
a car explosion. Yeah, a car explosion that occurred outside the synagogue in the Paris suburbs was, and then we got to click to read more.
Yes, it says the headlines are saying this was a mechanical failure.
But Lawrence, this is.
May I speak? May I speak, Mitchell, or are you going to shut me up again?
No, I'm asking you not to try.
Okay, well, I'm trying to tell you something, you elitists that think you know everything. There is more anti-Semitism than you can shake a stick at in Paris and in Europe and all over the world. This is a cover-up on the same day in Paris of what happened, And I contend that it's not a mechanical failure, that it was an anti-Semitic terrorist act, and you guys are poo-pooing it just because of your lack of knowledge of what's going on.
Lawrence, you don't know.
Yes.
Lawrence.
Is this Tuesday night?
You don't know me.
Is this Tuesday night?
Lawrence.
No.
What I'm saying to you, Lawrence, right now is you don't know me. Because if you knew me really well, first of all, you would have read my doctoral thesis, in which I deal with anti-Semitism and militant.
Oh, that's great. In the faculty lounge, that would impress people. But the reality is you're uninformed and misguided.
Back in a second, because I'm looking at some pictures of this car explosion that's parked right next to a synagogue. And the car is engulfed in flames, but it doesn't appear that the synagogue has any damage whatsoever. And I've been at a, twice in my life, I've been at a fresh car accident because I just happened to be the witness, and I pull over, and suddenly there's flames coming out of the back of the gas tank because of whatever caused it. And sometimes you got people out of the car. Now, the Muslims that come to this country, and I'm friends with a few of them, not most of them, but about three or four different people I know that are unrelated to each other, and they came here because they're from either Jordan or Palestine, the ones that I know, and they came here to get away from the craziness of the Middle East, and embrace.
It's hard to raise a family in some places.
Yes, and they want to embrace the American dream and leave that as a legacy, not only to their children, mm-hmm. but their grandchildren, great grandchildren. So they have a different attitude. The ones in France tend not to assimilate a great deal of them. They live in communities. And almost ghettoized, and the French French resent them, so they're kind of, there's no wall around them with a guard saying you can't leave, but it's hard to sociologically leave that community and rent a place here. Now in France, you could be a French citizen, immigrated here, or even your parents immigrated here to France, and if you're just acting like. It's like some of these Muslims, they'll deport you. And France every year deports a lot of Muslims, some of them French citizens, some of them not. And there's issues in France that we can't really relate to totally because we don't have that same kind
right.
of
yeah,
issue.
Yeah, they're under Napoleonic code. Their system is very different than a Dutch-English model legal system.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's hard for most of us under the political system that we live here in the United States to wrap our heads around what's going on in France.
And now we have an ISIL movement that is like Al-Qaeda on steroids and has like some ex-Saddam Hussein generals and colonels leading that movement.
Yeah, but you know,
expertise.
When you talk about the few in that movement that are among those ranks, you have to be very careful about that. We're not talking what I would call former regime elements.
I'm talking military trained.
But not very few of them. There's very few people.
That's the other ones leading the military.
No.
Arm of
no, 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 no,
they're
no,
not
you
leading
know,
the military
ISIL? No. First of all, the leader of this group, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, he's an imam. He has a doctorate in Islamic studies. And in Iraq, there were a few colonels and generals who joined that movement, but you got to understand what happened after the Persian Gulf War to appreciate this. After the Persian Gulf War, Saddam got spanked, and he knew it, and he was worried about insurrection, and he had to save face.
And you're referring to the early 90s.
Yes,
right now.
And so what he did following the Persian Gulf War was he made a lot of political appointments into his military. And so what you ended up with were certain people who were appointed to be colonels or generals who under normal circumstances would have never achieved that rank. Generals who didn't even have a high school diploma.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they weren't real generals.
But they were loyal to Saddam.
Yeah, and they had nothing to do afterward, and so they went with the flow. Most of the people in ISIL are not what I would, I would call former regime elements. Draw a distinction.
But I just wanted to touch across that point, not dive so deeply into it, mm-hmm. because ISIL now, through their internet, from what I've been reading, is running a website propaganda machine, not geared at you and me. They're geared at young Muslims across the world. And some of these Muslims have been pouring in into Iraq and Syria, and now they're sending them back to where they came from, Europe, England, United States, or wherever. And their websites are saying, you know, watch these videos, but don't come here. Do it there. Do it in your homes. So we don't really know exactly these three Muslims that did this outrageous terrorist attack, but they We don't know if they were yet, if they went to Syria, got trained, or came back, or exactly.
I doubt it. They have their last names are North African last names. You can tell by the transliteration of their last names. They're North Africans.
Right, but what's scary is they put these websites out there, and it's like, in a way, it's kind of like broadcast radio. You're not really sure who's picking up and who's listening and how you're influencing people. And then all of a sudden you have three young men going in and shooting up a magazine. You have, in Paris, you have two brothers in Boston setting off two backpack bombs at the Boston Marathon. And the people behind these websites are cheering, and they may not even know that these events are about to occur until they happen and hit the world news, but they're applauding and cheering and encouraging, and then they turn around and edify these people, whether they get away with it or they get killed, or right now the trial's beginning for the younger brother, and Massachusetts, which doesn't have a death penalty, is actually pushing for an exception for him. So this is what we have going on in the world right now, and Lawrence is right about there is a rise in anti-Semitism, especially among the Muslim population in Paris, and then you got the Arab world trying to convince the Europeans that, hey, if Israel didn't exist, we'd all be buddies, which of course is you could.
Yeah, if you look at the history of that part of the world, I don't think you could say that.
No, but they like to say it to the Europeans.
Well,
they want the Europeans to turn against Israel.
It's part of the information operations campaign.
Right. Okay. So you want to talk about mangroves now?
Yeah, I want to talk about mangroves now.
Yeah, because we have about 10 minutes left.
Oh, my goodness. Time flies.
Time for, yeah.
Oh, God.
I'm looking at what is 7 minutes left.
Well, I want to.
There's a clock over your shoulder that's only right.
Yeah, I see. I got the iPhone here. It says 9:54. Okay, so first of all, I want to give a shout out to the activists, the neighborhood activists on Palmasola Boulevard who alerted me to this. And you all over there do a great job of communicating with your county commissioner, John Chappie, about the carnage on Palmasola Boulevard and the ongoing saga of the Palmasola Bay Club development.
And the Palmasola Boulevard that runs between Cortez and Manatee Avenue?
Yes. And so to the south side, closer to Cortez, there's this old development. It went into bankruptcy for a while, but now it's under new ownership. And so the owners of this property have easement on the Palmasola Bay side of that area.
And it's solid mangroves there.
Yeah, there's like a very, very narrow, high ground area of Brazilian pepper, and then behind, about a few feet behind the Brazilian pepper, it gets low enough for mangroves to grow. And it's just nothing but a thick mangrove fringe. And it varies in width from place to place. And so mangroves protect property from storm surge and wind damage. And so we have public safety reasons for not wanting to.
That means they hold the land,
yes,
as land.
And they act as windbreaks.
Mm-hmm.
And so, we have.
They're hatcheries.
Yes, and they're fish. That's right, they're fish nurseries too. So grass flats, that's where little fish are born. And so anyone who likes to fish in Manatee County has an interest in wanting to make sure that our mangroves are treated nicely.
Right, because those little minnows you see swimming there?
Yeah.
They may not be so desirable but cute, but a few years from now they'll be at the end of your fishing pole, right?
Yeah, they'll be big fish out in Tampa Bay or out in the Gulf.
That's where they come from, right?
Yeah. And, our mullet, when you see people in these shallow areas around all our bays.
A Mitch Mullet?
Castness, Mitch Mullet, mulletagency.com. And he's starting up a commercial fishing enterprise with people. Anyway, so.
Not really.
So, the new owners of the Palmasola Bay Club back in late November appealed to the Manatee County Commissioners to have the mangroves trimmed. And you're not supposed to trim under 6 feet. And they were, the developers were told that they should use a certified mangrove cutter. And what the activists told me was they didn't use a certified mangrove cutter. And they said that under 6 feet there were just all kinds of fresh cuts. So I went out there yesterday and photographed the place. And
cut was it?
It was, they butchered it. They butchered it.
And how far?
Well, I'm 5 feet six, so I have pictures of myself pointing to cuts of mangroves that are below my shoulder height.
Really?
Yeah, and even onto the ground. And when you start trimming that low, when you start cutting them that low, you kill them. They don't survive.
Right.
But see, what's going to happen?
That's how you breathe.
Next week, the developers are going back to the county. The planning commission is going to decide whether or not to recommend that the developers build these long finger piers out off that easement. And so my attitude is they didn't play by the rules. They were given a special exception to the rule, and they violated it. So why would we want to give them any more?
They went beyond the exception they were given.
Yes, they did. And the Department of Environmental Protection came out, and the person who came out from the DEP said, this wasn't done right, and they'll get fined. But for these developers, the fine they have to pay is the cost of doing business.
Well, they should do more than just pay a fine. They should also pay for the restoration.
Well, you're listening to 1490 AM.
That's a good thought.
WWBR.
Yeah, sure.
Bradenton, Sarasota, Tampa Bay.
All right, we are out of here, and you've been listening to It's Your Gavel, and we went right to the end. We don't have enough time to play the theme song. We'll be back next Tuesday from 9 to 10 a.m., and you go to It's Your Gavel and listen to the archive. Please like us, share us, and follow us. Please go there. It'sYourGavel.com.
With SRN News, I'm Bob Agnew in Washington. A day of mourning in France today in Marseille is aired on BFM-TV. Crowd clapping to show support for the 12 people who were gunned down yesterday at a newspaper office in Paris. As for the attackers themselves, two are still on the loose. A third has turned himself into authorities. They seem to know what they were doing, says former CIA Director Michael Hayden, who appeared on NBC's Today Show.
They're comfortable with their weapons. They were calm. This wasn't a random attack. It was well planned. It wasn't a suicidal attack. They escaped in order to be able to kill again.
Hayden also noted that terrorist elements apparently are scaling back the size and scope of many of their plots, aiming instead toward more small targets and quick hits. It's colder than usual in much of the country. The exception would be some parts of the West, according to Bruce Terry at the National Weather Service.
Temperatures will average maybe 5 to 10 degrees above average in the western part of the country, and that'll be pretty much the case into the weekend.
Meanwhile, two people dead, nearly two dozen injured in an 18-vehicle pileup during a whiteout condition on a highway in western Pennsylvania. Yesterday, Pennsylvania State Police spokesman Jamie Levere.
Both of the deceased actually passed away after they exited their vehicle and were outside the cars.
The mayhem all piled up yesterday afternoon on Interstate 80 in Clarion Township, PA. Fewer Americans applying for unemployment benefits last week.
The Labor Department says applications for unemployment benefits declined by 4,000 to a seasonally adjusted 294,000. The four-week average slipped by 250 to 290,500. That average has fallen 16% in the past 12 months, as averages have stayed at historically low sub-300,000 levels since September.
That's SRN's Jeremy House reporting it. On Wall Street, the market showing signs of life. The Dow up more than 200 points in early trading, and this is SRN News.
Best-selling author, Dr. Charles Stanley.
One of the most valuable lessons you'll ever learn in the Christian life is learning to wait upon God. There's something about waiting we don't like. We naturally become impatient because we're living in a world where not only do we want it now, we can have it now. But that's not the way it is with God.
Dr. Charles Stanley's book, Waiting on God, is available now at bookstores everywhere.
have a family member who's getting older and can no longer be safely left alone? With Visiting Angels America's Choice in Senior Home Care, your parents and older family members can continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Experienced, compassionate caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meal preparation, and light housework up to 24 hours per day at affordable rates. To restore your family's peace of mind, call Visiting Angels toll-free today at 877-374-LIVE or at visitingangels.com.
The White House has issued another veto threat to the new Republican-led Congress. White House correspondent Greg Buxton.
In the opening 24 hours of the new Congress, the White House threatened to veto two bills, one on the Keystone XL oil pipeline and now one on Obamacare. Aides say President Obama would veto legislation that would increase the health care law's definition of a full-time worker from 30 to 40 hours per week. Republicans argue the 30-hour requirement is encouraging companies to cut workers' hours. Greg Clugston, SRN News, The White House.
Samsung Electronics estimating a 37% annual drop in its fourth quarter operating income in its latest earnings preview. Samsung put its October 3.